On Sunday, March 22nd, at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl presents composer, vocalist, multi-instrumentalist, Carmen Lundy. Join us as we discuss Carmen Lundy's career and spend a little time with vocalist Tana Alexa, who has her first CD release as a leader at Subculture. That's Sunday, March 22nd, at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
My name's Joyce Jones, and I'm on the line with...
Hi, my name is Tana Alexa. How are you doing, Joyce Jones?
I am swell. Thank you for joining Sugar in My Bowl. I really appreciate your coming on.
I appreciate you having me.
Oh, gosh. I'm so glad that you have something coming out.
Oh, me too. Been a long time coming.
You have a new release coming.
Yes, Ode to Heroes. It was released last week on March 10th on Harmonia Mundi Jazz Village. It's been a long process. You know, I actually recorded in 2012. But, you know, I made it my mission that I really wanted to get on a label and have a label distribute this record. And that's what ended up happening. I found a great label, and they're international and really respond to my jazz, world music, a little bit of pop style. And I think it's going to be a great fit. I'm really excited.
Catherine Russell's on that label as well. You're in good company.
Yes, she is.
Tell me about Ode to Heroes.
Well, Ode to Heroes, it's my first record as a leader. I've been on a few records as a sideband so far, but it's been really an unbelievable experience to put out something under my own name. Number one, because I wanted to showcase myself not only as a singer, but as a composer and an arranger. Most of the tunes on the record are original compositions of mine that kind of meld genres together, going from a jazz bass, very rooted in jazz, but it has some pop sensibility and some world music sensibility. So there's a little bit of a blending of genres there. And then there are a few arrangements written really for heroes of mine. The idea behind Ode to Heroes is to basically pay tribute through music to the musicians and people in my personal life that really had an impact on me as I've been growing throughout all these years and how I've developed into a musician, how I've developed into a human being. And I just really wanted to give back in the only way that I know how to give back, through song.
Who are some of the heroes?
Well, right off the bat, the three arrangements that I wrote were for three of my favorite jazz standards. Number one was Prince by Wayne Shorter. Wayne is one of the most iconic composers ever, and this Footprints, which has been done and redone many, many times for reasons, it really speaks to people, and it spoke to me, and I created this musical arrangement of Footprints, wrote lyrics to the tune, and wrote lines for vibraphone, tenor sax, piano, bass, drums, and voice. The next arrangement that I did was for Take Five, written by Paul Desmond and then performed by Dave Brubeck. And then the last arrangement, which was not so much a musical arrangement, but more an ode in the form of lyrics, I wrote a vocalese to Charles Mingus's Goodbye Pork Pie Hat over John Handy's solo. And that tune was one of the most influential tunes, I think, of my life. It was the first instrumental standard that I learned. You know, coming right out of high school, I had always been musical. I had been playing violin since the age of four. I had been singing. I had been writing music. But somehow music, as big of a part of my life as it was, it still didn't enter my mind that it could be a possible career choice. And so I went to school for a year in college as a psych major. And as an elective, I took a jazz course. And there was this 5 minutes every week where I would get to sing. And it just opened my heart and opened my soul so much that I knew that something had to happen from this. And one of the very first tunes that we learned in that class, because it was a jazz improv class, was Goodbye Pork Pie Hat by Charles Mingus. And there was something about that tune that spoke to me and really just had such a huge impact, especially in the point in my life where I was kind of deciding, did I want to go for music? Did I want to stay in this more mainstream type of education, being a psych major? And I just took a leap of faith and I said, you know, this really makes me happy and I need to try. The people in my personal life that have tributes on this record include my mother, Mercy. As I live in New York, my parents live very far. They live in Croatia. Parents tend to miss their children. And so in times of family struggle and when people feel lonely, it's nice to know that somebody's there and that you have the love. And I wrote two pieces on the record for her. One is called M's Lullaby, and it's just a very short, simple melody, really just a lullaby. And then the tune that comes after that is called You Are Not Alone, and it's just to let my mom know that no matter where I am in the world or what I'm doing, I'm always with her.
You have a CD release coming up, as a matter of fact. It is Monday, the 23rd.
Monday the 23rd.
Yes.
At Subculture?
Yes.
At 8 p.m. I'm really looking forward to it. We have the great Antonio Sanchez on drums that night, the great Donnie McCaslin on tenor that night, and then we have Sergio Salvatore on piano, Jorge Roder on bass, Ben Phlox, also on tenor saxophone, Christos Raffalidis on vibraphone, Nicole Zoraitis and Rachel Eckroff on background vocals. So we're going to have full house. It's going to be great. It's going to be an unbelievable concert and event in my life. And speaking of our two special guests, they are actually two of the main heroes in my life that I named the album after and wrote the tune Ode to Heroes for.
Yeah.
It was the first time that I had written a piece of music with other musicians in mind, with their sound, with their capabilities. And I wanted to really write something where I heard Antonio playing drums, Donnie playing sax, and me singing in the middle of it. And, of course, sitting in my room with my piano writing this tune, I never thought that that would actually be the first recording of it, but it just ended up happening that way. And now we're going to perform it live together to release this CD, and I couldn't be happier than to share the stage with those two giants and unbelievable musicians who have really not only inspired me, but motivated me and just made me want to be the best musician that I can be.
Excellent. Tana Alexa is going to be at Subculture. That's 45 Bleecker Street at 8 p.m. on Monday, tomorrow, March 23rd. Get out there. So thank you so much, Tana Alexa. Thank you so much for sharing this information, and hopefully people will make it out to Subculture tomorrow night.
I hope so. Thank you so much, Joyce. It's always a pleasure to be on your show. And keep doing what you do, because we need it.
And for those who may remember, Tana Alexa visited WBAI during International Working Women's Day for the live performance segment. She came in with Julian Lage, which was really,
That's really great.
Thank you so much for then, and thank you so much for what you continue to do, Tana Alexa.
Thanks, Joyce. Thank you so much for having me, and hope to see you at Subculture.
Fine. to heaven. Then when you could go, you'll never get to heaven. The devil loves a bad girl. You'll never get to heaven.
Hi, my name's Joyce Jones, and I'm on the line with, what's your name, ma'am?
Well, I'm Carmen. Carmen Lundy.
Hi, Carmen Lundy. Thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl. We started the program with Kindred Spirits. We had ended our previous Sugar program with Kindred Spirits, and Kindred Spirits is from your most recent release, Soul to Soul. And when we spoke earlier, you had mentioned that Kindred Spirits was your story. Could you explain that to the listeners?
Well, you know, everybody started somewhere. So this is my 14th recording, and I've been doing more and more as a jazz vocalist. I've been kind of taking more of a risk in presenting the audience with original material. And as you find those creative inspirations, I think sometimes you have to consider the source. And in this case, I consider the source. And I think it's important, no matter what you choose in life, I think it's important to kind of harken back to your early beginnings as a way to feel grounded, as a way to kind of, I would say, quantify and validate yourself for the life and for the journey. And I think Kindred Spirits was really that lesson that I think we get from those people around us who are our role models. They're not famous names, they're not famous people most the time, but they're indeed our role models. So the song was really about that, about those lessons, the things you kind of find being part of your identity for a long time. So it was important to me to sing about that.
So based on the song then, you're a PK, May Preacher's Kid?
I am the product of a very religious family upbringing. My mother was the lead singer in a gospel group. My father was not a preacher. My grandparents, they owned the family market in the community that I grew up in. My grandfather built the homes that his family members lived in. He built the church that I grew up in. So I have a very strong early connection to childhood memories as they relate to that particular upbringing. And I think, as we know from the great teacher Martin Luther King, that a lot of our salvation and freedom is a result of that commitment and faith that has brought us through so much. So I think that's something that's part of the African-American experience, certainly. And I'm just a product of that same thing.
And you were born in Miami, Florida?
That's right, yeah.
What was it like in Miami, Florida, musically, growing up? I understand that you sort of entered church music around 12.
Well, I was much younger than that. I mean, I did get formal piano lessons long before that. I think I was around 6 or 7. But, you know, during that time in public schools, you know, music was a part of the curriculum.
Right.
So I was introduced to music from the time I can remember, even first grade. You know, that was a part of the school day. And then, of course, growing up in a house where there was, I think every family member I knew had a piano or some kind of instrument in their home. So it just seemed to me like that was what life was about, along with all the other things. Music was a part of it. So I think for me, the fact that it was in school and that I wanted to be just like my mother and be in her choir and learn all their songs, and someday, hopefully, if I learned their songs, I would join them. So all of that was important to me. But my grandfather also looked at the youth in terms of the future, and he organized a group for the younger singers. And I think I joined that group when I was about 11, singing the harmony part. So harmony was always more fascinating to me musically than just melody. You know, and you get a strong rhythmic emphasis in the black church as well. Some churches allowed drums, some didn't.
Right.
There was always the spontaneous part of any song that had to do with a personal feeling that someone wanted to express, you know, all of that. And then I think I was introduced to the blues as that other side of life, when people were just kicking back and, you know, hanging and having a good time.
Right.
And I think hearing the blues was what really triggered a sense of the cultural breadth, the wide breadth of a cultural distinction, you know, in the African-American experience. So I think that when I heard the blues, that was pretty much the trigger for me. I grew up in the 60s and the 70s. Those were my school years. And the 60s and the 70s, of course, was a huge turning point in American culture. You had a lot of successful artists of color making a name for themselves through many different channels, and you had a lot of the important, I would say, we made quite an impression on Europeans with our music, so we got a lot of the artists from the United Kingdom began to really make a name for themselves, and then you had the whole movement of the sexual revolution. All those things were what were shaping us and shaping our culture at the time, not to mention a couple of wars thrown in. So for me, I think when I began to hear the work and the way Stevie Wonder broke away from singing the music from his early years at Motown, because he had a lot more to say and to sing about with regard to the times we were living in, I think that was a trigger for me. I think that the whole idea of being able to write about the times we live in made it difficult for me in certain ways, because jazz vocalists generally are associated with music of a certain time and reimagining it. And for me to step out and want to do something a little bit outside those, stereotypes, because that's what they are, we really don't have to do that. It's just what people seem to think we do. So all of this has made for quite a unique experience in my time here as a vocalist, as a musician, a composer, and many other things. So I think that creative side of me was very, very inspired to try new things and try new ways of doing things. And it all has to do with all the things I've mentioned with regard to my upbringing.
Now, before we continue, I want to thank our previous Sugar guest, Sheila Anderson, for helping to make this exchange happen. And I really appreciate her helping to facilitate that. And also, I want to go back to Soul to Soul. Now, you composed the words and the music to Soul to Soul, the release?
There are 13 tunes on the project. Mm-hmm. There are two that I did not write, one being the work of the great Mary Lou Williams, a song called What's Your Story, Morning Glory.
What's your story, morning glory? What makes you look so blue? The way that you've been acting, I don't know what to do, for I love you. Sure as one and one makes two. What's your story, morning glory? Got a feeling there's a lot you're concealing. Oh, won't you let me know your point of view? What's your story, morning glory? You've got me worried too. The postman came this morning and left a note for you. Did you read it? Then you know that I love you. What's your story, morning glory? Give an answer to this patient romantic. Oh, won't you tell me that you love me too? what's your story, Morning Glory? You've got me worried too. The postman came this morning and left a note for you. Did you read it? Then you know that I love you. What's your story, Morning Glory? Give an answer to this patient romantic. Oh, won't you tell me that you love me too?
Where you hear Barry Allen and I in a duet. That piece was written really, really early on in her career, and I wanted to just really give her her props. And so many people are still learning about Mary Lou Williams, and I just wanted to do my little bit in making sure that people were aware of her work as a great American pianist who influenced so many other composers and musicians as well. And the other tune is written by one of my contemporaries, an artist that I met during my time in New York in the late 70s through the 80s and early 90s. Her name is Marilyn Castelaw, and Marilyn was one of those artists, just like so many others, who were applying their craft in New York at that time. And I came to really, really love her writing. As a matter of fact, I think this might be the first tune of hers I've ever recorded. That's Don't You Know How I Feel.
Watching the clouds roll away from me, I'm imagining how I might sing a song of love to you. When something you said went to my head, turning me around. Don't you know how I feel about you? Doesn't it show how I feel about you? So special about myself, that's really so different than anyone else. I asked for so much, but what could be enough? Fulfilling my dreams to the sky, and what we have. It's been you and I. Don't you know how I feel about you? Doesn't it show? Dreams to the sky. What we have is what is at hand. And lately it's been you and I. Don't you know how I feel about you?
there's another that I want to do on the next project. So just to kind of let you in on those of us who were participating in adding to the jazz repertoire many years before now, and we're finally getting around to recognizing some of those people. The other 11 songs are mine. Now, there are a couple of collaborations, I should add, where, you know, I haven't always been a writer unto myself. I like the idea of taking some of these songs and writing with someone, which has also helped me to shape my chops and to build my own sense of skill and composition. So over the years, I've written with several people. Rich Mateen, you can hear a lot of the work we did on my first album, Good Morning Kiss.
Yes.
Since then, I've also written with an artist by the name of Deborah Ash. She's more of a lyricist. She wrote the lyrics to Sardinia, which is on Soul to Soul.
Yes.
And then Julie Rayner and I have also composed over the years. The two songs that Julie and I wrote together on Soul to Soul are Life is a Song and Me and When Will They Learn? So when you arrive at these kinds of excellent results in a project, you have a lot of help.
Yeah.
You know, you can't take all the credit. I can't take all the credit when I know and realize that it took the contribution of the great Patrice Rushen on piano and Daryl Hall on bass, Jameson Loss on drums, Carol Robbins playing harp, Benny Maupin on tenor saxophone, Randy Brecker on trumpet, you know, his wife Ada Ravati playing tenor sax. I'm actually playing guitar on the record. There's Warren Wolf is playing vibraphone. So, you know, the whole thing was a collaboration, really. They just kind of stepped up and felt, and I think followed through on my initial ideas that I had laid down in the studio prior to getting those 3 days in the studio where we recorded here in Southern California. All of that goes into making a project like Soul for Soul really speak to you.
You're playing guitar. The contribution of your guitar, I understand that there's a story that goes to that. You want to tell how your guitar playing wound up being used in the recording?
Well, I have always been fascinated with the instrument and just looked at it, and I was always perplexed by everything. And there's a recording called Solamente, which I think is really what kind of steered me in the direction that ended up at Soul to Soul, where I was playing a little bit of guitar in my practice, in my composition, in my kind of looking for some musical ideas. And I took the guitar with me when I traveled to the Betty Carter Jazz and Head program every year. I decided to bring the guitar with me because I thought I might have a little downtime to kind of fool around, and was given a half-hour guitar lesson by a bassist by the name of Chip Jackson. Chip gave me a half an hour of his time, showed me a couple of things about the instrument, which absolutely turned things inside out for me. So when I got home, I just kept applying that little lesson to the instrument, and suddenly I heard things and melodies in a way that I had not really come to know as a pianist initially, and using the piano for all these years as my tool for my writing, the guitar became this other entity that really turned things inside out for me. And maybe it was because it forced me to be simple, to a kind of a simplistic way of hearing melody. I'm not quite sure, but it really did fascinate me and produce certain things that I don't think I could have done without that instrument. So when I got started on this project, a lot of my trials, you know, a lot of those first drafts, we'll call them, I was playing the instrument as a way to kind of see where I was at, and kind of thought, well, if I can do this, then maybe the actual guitarist will get an idea of what I have in mind. So it was really as a, kind of a template, and when we got closer and closer to recording, lo and behold, I am finding myself with the suggestion of my engineer, Don Murray, and the great arranger, producer, Gil Goldstein. They were telling me that things were kind of cool the way they were, and I trusted them. So I just left those tracks just the way they are.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Thank you.
So all the guitar that's being played on this release is played by Carmen Lundy.
That's correct.
Yay.
It's hysterical.
That's great. I have to tell you, I love every song on Soul to Soul, every single song. And my partner, Hank Williams, he's associate producer of Sugar in My Bowl, he plays it over and over and often at home. And
wow.
So I have to say, they all stand out for me, but the ones that really resonate with me are the ones that you did with Patrice Rushen, Life is a Song, and the title track, Soul to Soul.
Of me in my life. a song in me. Life is a song in me. Life is a song you make me sing. Life is a song.
How did you wind up working with Patrice Rushen? I mean, I understand you've worked before this anyway.
Well, we came together. I met Patrice many years ago. We both live in Southern California. But we came together as a result of the Terry Lynn Carrington Mosaic Project.
Right.
So as that project began to tour, Terry Lynn would invite any number of those artists who participated in that great record to be a part of the tour. So there was one concert in particular that I think triggered our really having a meeting of the minds and agreeing that we wanted to do something together was a gig we had in Vicksburg, Mississippi. And we were both headed back to our homes here, and on the same flight we got a chance to really chat about what I had in mind. And I had been working on this project already for about 10 or 12 months before I showed the work to Patrice. And I was very honest with her. I really could hear her. After working with her, I knew that she was a sound I needed in the piano work for the record. And she stepped right in and has done a beautiful, brilliant job.
Excellent.
secrets are teardrops coming from the soul. Answers to questions waiting to be told. The heartache you feel, it can be healed by the warmth of the hand reaching out for you to hold.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for March 22nd. This segment features aerial listings of Sugar and My Bowl guests so you can experience them live. This week's show features an interview with Carmen Lundy, and we have a short intro with vocalist Tana Alexa. Lundy has no area appearances, but you can catch Tana Alexa's CD release party on Monday the 23rd at Subculture. Go to subculturenewyork.com for details. And we have more music for you this week. We start again with a special ticket giveaway for the Schomburg Library's Women's Jazz Festival on Monday, March 23rd. We have a total of 4 tickets to Great Women of Blues and Jazz Show, curated by Toshi Regan and featuring bassist Mimi Jones. Tickets are first come, first serve. To get a ticket, go to our blog and see the post for the ticket giveaway. And fill the form out with your name and contact info, and we'll let you know by tomorrow if you're the winner. Go to our main website, which is sugarinmybowl.org, and click the link for the blog. You'll find details there. Good luck! Saxophonist Oliver Lake is also a visual artist and has an exhibit of his painted sticks at the Algiers Center for Contemporary Art in downtown Newark, New Jersey, until May 21st. Details are at aljira.org. That's aljira.org. Drummer Jeff Tane Watts hosts a listening session of some of his favorite music at the National Jazz Museum in Harlem on the 25th. Details are at jazzmuseuminharlem.org. Guitarist Mark Rebo will be at Greenwich House in Manhattan for the Uncharted series on the 26th. See greenwichhouse.org for details on that. And pianist Jerry Allen, bassist Mimi Jones, and saxophonist Tier Fuller are all part of the lineup in a free concert at Rutgers University's Newark, New Jersey campus on the 26th as well. The concert's free, but you should register at the website for the Women in Media Newark organization at wim-n.com. That's wim-n.com. Pianist Michelle Rosewoman leads her new Yoruba ensemble at Jazz at Lincoln Center's Dizzy's Club from the 27th to 29th. See jalc.org for info. And pianist Onaje Allen Gums is at Kitano on March 28th. Details are at kitano.com. Saxophonist Lou Donaldson will be at William Patterson University's Shea Center for the Performing Arts in Patterson on March 29th. Info is at wppresents.org. Saxophonist Lakeisha Benjamin will lead her soul squad at the Schomburg on March 30th with vocalist Catherine Russell to wrap up the Women's Jazz Festival. Schomburg.org has your details, and check into our blog next weekend for tickets for that show. Pianist Randy Weston will lead his African Rhythm Sextet with bassist Alex Blake at the Jazz Standard. They'll be there from April 2nd to 5th. See jazzstandard.com for info. Saxophonist Tia Fuller leads a quartet at Smoke from April 3rd through 5th with bassist Mimi Jones. SmokeJazz.com has details on that. Finally, low brass specialist on two-band trombone Joe Daly is at Terra Blues with Hazmat Modine on April 4th and 18th, and you can find info at terrablues.com. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, full listings are on our blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link for the blog. Playlists and audio from this and previous shows are on the main website as well. And if you like what we do, please help WBAI stay on the air by pledging whatever you can and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. See the Support WBAI link on our site to find out more. This is Hank Williams signing off. With our biweekly schedule, we're off the air next week, but we'll have updated event listings online and be back on WBAI on Sunday, April 5th. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on The Bandstand.
You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM Pacifica Radio. Online at WBAI.org.
The role of media in a democratic society should be to empower people to make decisions.
WBAI, speaking truth to power for over 50 years.
You have very few powerful media outlets that are actually doing the two things that I think are the most central aims of good journalism, which is to give voice to the voiceless and hold those in power accountable.
WBAI, your community alternative.
Grace. The song Grace, mm-hmm. Apparently that's there's a very deep story that's attached to that, how you about recording that. Would you like to share that with us?
Yeah, well, you know, I would recommend that your listeners go and check out the video of Grace. It explains a lot about that tune. And I think I knew that I needed for the audience to understand the inspiration for that piece. So I went as far as to create a video to go alongside the performance.
So long, with our hands to the ground, I'm
That was one of those songs that began on the guitar, and it was, as I developed the composition, I was haunted by the inspiration. That inspiration being based on the slave trade, one of the slave traders in particular, John Newton, and his writing of the song Amazing Grace, the actual lyric, because the melody was borrowed from the slaves on the ship. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know that. And I was haunted by that story and that, you know, just kind of identifying with that experience and having traveled to many countries on the African continent. And the one in particular where I did visit a slave port was the coast of Angola. And I was just so, I don't know what to call the feeling. I don't really know what that feeling is. I just know that it was a bit of horror, a bit of sadness, a bit of outrage for what was exacted upon the people that way for so many, 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 many hundreds of years. So it was very, very powerful when it really sank in. And I became obsessed with that one song, so much so that there were several concerts where I was invited to perform in South Africa, one being Johannesburg, the Joy Jazz Festival, one being the Cape Town Jazz Festival in Cape Town, South Africa, and discovering that I had a huge fan base there, and one thing led to another, and here I am realizing that these people are really following me and very much committed to supporting my work. I get back to Los Angeles. I jump back into my trying to get the Soul to Soul record done, and I was surprised to hear that one of those wonderful people that I met in South Africa was in Los Angeles representing the inaugural South Africa Film and Music Festival, and one of the artists on that concert stage was the person, the vocalist and composer, Simpiwe Dana, and I heard her for the first time that night. And we met after the show. She was friends with the MC who provided us with this great introduction. And as a result of spending some time with them while they were here in Southern California, I exposed her to this one piece. You know, I wanted to show her what I was doing, you know, artistically and just what, where my head was at. And I told her about this one piece. I was reminded in that moment that, yeah, maybe I can, I'm gonna check this out. So I tell her what the inspiration was for it, and she was so taken with what she heard that she began to write music and words. And then she began to record this music and these words, and it was just so unbelievable that I found this experience happening, you know, after all those months of being intrigued and haunted and just absolutely obsessed with this one particular composition, for someone to actually come from South Africa who knows of apartheid, who has lived it and has seen it become history, and then for her to contribute to this composition was just so incredibly powerful. And without that, that song would still be sitting somewhere, you know, waiting to see the light of day. So, you know, it's an interesting thing how music is born, how ideas are born, and, you know, from the souls of people. And that was truly from soul to soul. And I think we had the help of a lot of souls when that song was born. And that's why I think, you know, every time I hear that tune, something hits me right in my core every time I hear it. It's beyond me. It's like, I think it's, you know, it's got its own form, you know, yes, its own shape and energy. And there's something very, very special about it, which is why I suggest to the listeners that they take a moment to just check it out on YouTube, Carmen Lundy Grace, and you'll see what we were trying to say visually as you listen to the music.
Excellent.
I'm playing the piano. I'm playing all the keyboards on that and the guitar on that.
Excellent.
So that's another one where I just left the music as it was. And then Patrice, on that particular recording, you hear Patrice, she's playing that wonderful flute that you hear, and the high register flute.
Oh, wow.
And she's also singing the background along with Jameson. So I've got Jameson and Patrice, and I think at one point, just so you kind of get us a whole picture, at one point I asked everybody to just come in to the studio and sing with me and just hum a part of the melody to Amazing Grace. So there was a lot of wonderful healing in that particular performance.
Amazing, indeed. Talk to me about the importance of being a composer in addition to being a vocalist.
Well, you know, we were talking about Nina Simone at the beginning, and I understand that I heard, who was it, John Stevens say, when he received the Grammy, that, you know, Nina Simone said to composers, write about the time you live in. And I want to sing about the times I live in. And I'm a product of the great jazz vocalist. That's right. That's who I am. And I've studied very hard and long and sung the repertoire of many of our great American writers, not to exclude Duke Ellington, not to exclude Cole Porter, the Hammerstein, the Rodgers and Hammerstein book, the Holy Carmichael, so many others. I cut my teeth on that. But I believe that after 4.5 decades of doing this music, that I feel compelled at this point and motivated to find a way to sing about the time that we're in. And music has evolved in many different ways, and I don't think jazz is getting its prop for all that we have in our pop culture, all the choices that we now have. I find that jazz is, if we could just get our black community to really take ownership once again of this music, we might be in a better place than we are now. So I feel very strongly about finding ways to connect with the people who are listening, breathing on the planet right now. And if I can say something that connects to you, then that's fulfilling for me. And that's why I write, is to be a part of the now in the music while staying true to myself and not negating any of or all of what has brought me to this point artistically and creatively as a woman living in this time when we see our first president who deservingly was voted in to represent this world and happens to be a man of color. There's a lot of changes going on right now, and somebody needs to sing about them. So I feel that it's such a small fraction of a contribution to the society that we're living in right now. That's what I'm about.
said they're lost and alone. What they need in their lives is to find the way home. When will they learn when will they know why don't they see they cannot grow
also as a vocalist, would you stress the importance of exploring composition?
I don't know. I just know that I'm not saying to singers, you know, write your own song. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that necessarily. But I would say this, sing something new. Sing something that nobody else has done before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bring something new to the table. Let's just be part of creating a whole new body of compositions.
Right.
You know? That help people kind of connect to who you are. I think that for as much as I love, I think I'm always thinking about Sarah Vaughan, the great Sarah Vaughan.
Yes.
Sarah Vaughan is like, to me, one of the most awesome contributors to the music. And when I mention one, it doesn't exclude anybody else. It's just that I think of her right now as we speak. You know, but I'm not going to be Sarah. You know what I mean? Sarah did her thing, and there's a lot of the documentation is there. Her contribution to this music is so profound. She made saxophone players play different, you know?
Right, right.
She made drummers play different, not
right.
just singers. And, you know, she came and she really took care of that part of what her contribution was. She made it profoundly impactful.
Sure.
So,
however,
I can't be her.
She sang the song.
Right.
She sang what is referred to as the Great American Songbook.
Right, and she owned whatever she sang, and that's
yes.
important, too.
Yes.
So, but she also gave us songs that, I mean, the way she gave us the vocal rendition of Misty,
yes.
nobody can ever do that again.
This is true.
You know? That's her. So what I'm saying to the young vocalists, those of you, find your own voice, and sometimes you got to do that with something that you can own, whether you wrote it or not. I think that's part of the art of interpretation, which is also part of what makes the jazz singer distinguish from maybe some other genres, is that we have a certain particular art that we bring to interpreting someone else's composition. And I would invite them all to see my stuff. I mean, it's out there. If you want my stuff, just, you know, hey, you know, go for it. And maybe you can show me something on my tune that I didn't hear myself, you know.
Right.
But it's really about all of us being willing to participate in what's happening as we live and breathe now. As much as the past shapes who we are, we have a responsibility in shaping the future of the music.
And you have, like, over, 60, 70, probably 80 compositions at this point.
No, it's more than that, and I'm very proud of that.
That's wonderful. Now, what you were saying also leads to Aphrasia Productions. That is the label that you're on?
Aphrasia Productions, yes.
Yes. What is your relationship, other than being on the label?
Well, Aphrasia Productions began with Elizabeth Bowie's inspiration to document my work and to really commit to seeing a lot of my catalog being recorded and documented. Elizabeth Bowie is a producer in her own right, and I am part owner of Aphrasia Productions. We have now maybe 10 or 12 projects that are part of the discography, part of the catalog, and we are an independent label, something that works fine for me right now. I mean, I realize that as an independent label, Aphrasia competes alongside some of the better known labels that publish jazz recordings, but I feel that she's a very successful producer and record label owner and very committed to the work that I have been doing. She has also released the work of Myra Casales. Her first album was released on Aphrasia, and we are also building quite a catalog and discography. Some of the work that I might have done on other labels is now part of the Aphrasia catalog.
Excellent.
So it's growing.
Okay.
And I think our goal is to continue to pursue, which is quite an undertaking, to make sure that my products and the work I do are distributed worldwide and that people have a sense of having access to my ongoing development as an artist. So you'll find us on Twitter tweeting all day long every day and letting people, tuning people in to my future concert dates and all of that through Facebook. So it's really very consuming, and at this point I think we're doing okay, and maybe there's a couple more records down the road for us before we begin to reevaluate what we, you know, would like to do as a record label.
I wanted to ask you, Carmelindy, about distribution. How is that for you these days with Aphrasia Productions?
We're doing fine. You can find us just about anywhere. I mean, if you're in California, there is a record store out here called Amoeba, and that's the bone of contention with me. I'm a little perplexed by the fact that the only way to buy music now is you got to have a computer. That annoys the heck out of me. But you can get my music from any of the outlets, iTunes, Amazon. If you happen to be in a town that actually has a record store, you know, like a place that actually sells vinyl, CDs, then you can find my music there too. If you happen to be in the UK, you can buy my music in the stores in the UK and every other place that you can actually find a physical copy of. Otherwise, you can also, if nothing else works, you can definitely go to my website and my entire discography. If it's on that website, then we probably could make it available to you. So you don't have a problem getting your hands on my work.
Excellent. Now, I just want to let people know that Aphrasia Productions does have a website. It's Aphrasia, A-F-R-A-S-I-A, Productions, plural, .com. It can go there and find out what's happening on the label and with events
as well. And the CarmenLundy.com website informs you on a daily basis as things develop. So you can also go directly to Carmen Lundy and learn about Aphrasia through my website as well.
Actually, that's much better.
Yeah. Upcoming performances are always listed, and you can check out the artwork that I am beginning to consider doing some kind of exhibition in the next year or so, which I'm excited about. There's a lot of information there.
So do you want to talk about your being a visual artist?
Well, I work at it. I've produced a few things in this last year that are quite different from the oil on canvas that is what you see most of on the website.
Mm-hmm.
When you purchase the Soul to Soul record, and when you get the actual physical CD of Soul to Soul, when you purchase the actual physical CD of Changes, Solamente, and all the ones prior to the three I just mentioned, you will see some of my artwork in all of that.
Right.
If you open the jacket cover to Soul to Soul, there are three different mediums right there in the jacket sleeve. I have a sculpture on the right that's entitled Smoking at the Hi-Hat, and in the center is a chair that I built, kind of a sculpted chair, if you will, and there's also a sculpture of a family tree that's actually my roots dating back to 1784.
Wow.
And then on the back panel, there's a sculpture of a guitar made of mosaic stones. So, you know, and that's just on the Soul to Soul project. On the Changes, I actually did the cover. And on the inside, there's a portrait of me at the guitar, which is kind of my way of marking time with my falling in love with that instrument. So there's a lot of that that you can also see and experience. I'm self-taught in that regard. I don't have any formal information or background of study with regard to the visual arts. It's just something that I stumbled onto in the 90s and continue to work at. But it's a wonderful, wonderful way to kind of make a creative effort away from music.
Actually, if people go to CarmenLundy.com, there is an artwork tab where there are plenty of pieces there that are available. If you really like them, you can have them in your home. This is great the way you set that up as well. There seems to be a lot of musicians who use visual art as an outlet. And I know quite a few. I mean, Miles Davis was one of them. Dick Griffin, the trombonist, he's another one. There are so many. Oliver Lake.
Victor Bailey.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's great to see that you're also one of those people. Let's go to when you came to New York. You wound up working with the Thad Jones Mel Lewis Orchestra?
No, I didn't. I came to New York to visit because I was trying to feel it out. And while I was there, I went down to the Vanguard and I took three of my big band charts with me. And during the first break, I asked, you know, I approached Thad and Mel and introduced myself, told them I was my first time in New York and I was wondering if I could sit in with the band. And they were so gracious with that. They actually took my three big band charts and sight read them.
Oh.
You know, that nothing could be more encouraging than that for a young kid trying to make their start in New York City.
What
I never worked with that band.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, it was just that experience.
Yeah.
That was great. What was their reaction to that, though?
That was just so cool. I mean, it was just so cool. I mean, you know, you got to imagine, I must have been a scrawny little, skinny little, you know, kid from Miami. What did I know? But I had my confidence. You know, I was in my fourth year of jazz studies at the University of Miami. I knew my charts. I knew my music.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some big band charts with me, too.
Wow.
I mean, just imagine, you know, this spunky little kid showing up saying, can you play my music? It's like, they were cool.
Excellent.
Very cool.
That also seems to be something that isn't as prevalent in the industry right now.
That's unfortunate.
It is. Where do you think the opportunities are?
It seems like, you know, things are shifting to the classroom.
Yes.
We've got to get our kids to understand that when it's showtime, it's got nothing to do with the classroom at all. And I think we've got a whole new generation of artists who are making a name for themselves coming through these universities and these, competitions and what have you, which is great. However you can get it done, but it doesn't really fly until you take it to the people.
Well, I understand you actually, with the University of Southern California with Patrice Rushen, you've instructed some workshops there as well?
Oh, yeah. And I'm headed to my 15th year at Betty Carter's Jazz Head Program at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. So I'll be spending a two-week residency with the young new crop that were chosen out of a pool of about 180.
Mm.
I think we're going to be dealing with 25 artists that were chosen to participate this year in the residency program. Then I'll head on to spend a couple of days with the young developing artists currently studying at the Berklee School of Music in Boston. And then later in the fall, I'll be going into Finland to spend some time in Helsinki at the Sibelius Academy to work with their young artists. You know, that's another part of the responsibility we have as artists who have made a contribution to the music. We have to make sure that we share the experience with our young people. And that's my way of doing it.
What is your focus? Is it presentation? Is it vocals? Is it something more? Something else?
It's all of that. It's the music. It's really all about that. I mean, I happen to be a singer, but I am also a musician, and I've studied and I'm trained, and I have knowledge with regard to those things that make us all communicate with one another. So it may sometimes I walk away from these experiences having learned more than perhaps they learned from me, you know. So it's just a kind of a give and take, and whatever that is that I can share, I do.
Now, I haven't mentioned at all, but I should probably bring it up, your brother, Curtis Lundy.
Bassist. The great Curtis Lundy.
Yes. There's actually a recording that really brought you to my consciousness, Blue Woman. that's your song, your composition, Blue
right.
Woman.
Right.
It is just so soul-filled. How is it working with your brother?
Curtis is great. Curtis is like, you know, he's the personification of a bass, you know, the sound of the bass. My brother understands that instrument. He knows how to take command using that instrument to really drive the rhythm section. He's an arranger. He's a great mentor. I think he has a way of bringing out the best in everyone's performance. He started out on electric bass.
Yeah.
And, yeah, people don't know that. I don't think my, I think I might have the only recording of my brother playing electric bass.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. And he's going to be surprised to know that I actually have this recording. I have to give it to him, actually.
Mm.
It's the recording I'm talking about is, he played on my senior recital in college.
Oh.
And at that time, he was playing electric bass. And, oh. And dang, really damn good. Yeah, so Curtis and I have a concert. We're going to be playing together. I think the last time we were together was at the Blue Note
oh.
a couple years back. I've been really missing playing with him. We're going to be doing two nights in a town called Alpharetta, Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
At the new club there called the Velvet Note. So Curtis, I'm his special guest.
Okay.
So I'm going in to do this gig with my brother. It's his gig, and I'm his special guest.
Yes.
So let me make that very clear to everybody. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to that next month.
Oh, it's great. When are you coming to New York?
I'm scheduled to perform at Dizzy's Club Coca-Cola in September of this year.
We certainly have something to look at. It seems so far away, but we'll be there. We'll be there.
It'll be there before we blink. You know how that is.
Yes. That's great. Now, I know there's a lot that was probably left out with regard to your journey. Is there anything that you want to share that brought you to this place where you are now?
Just a lot of help for a lot of great people. You know, I'm just very, very thankful and grateful to those wonderful people who allowed me the opportunity to, you know, kind of ply my wares in New York. If it wasn't for Ann Duncan, my choral teacher, who's, I don't know how she magically figured out a way to get me accepted into the University of Miami Music School, I have to thank her. I have to thank a lot of people for recognizing that I really, truly wanted to share this, what I believe was a gift, with people. And I'm one of all those wonderful people who have walked with me and opened the doors that allowed me to walk through them so that I could sit and talk with you for this little time. And that's it. And, you know, just really grateful for the fans who have dedicated themselves to following the work, being a part of this jazz journey, with those of us who are out there kicking it, you know, trying to keep the integrity and the quality and the bar really high, you know, those of you. So I want to thank you guys, too, because without you, we really would really be in a, I wouldn't even want to imagine what it would be like without you, quite honestly. So I just want to, you know, stop and take a moment to acknowledge the listeners and the audience for their support.
Well, everybody, if Carmen Lundy is in your area, make certain that you get yourself to that venue to hear Carmen Lundy live. Get your hands on Soul to Soul. Check out the back catalog. If you're not familiar with Carmen Lundy, you should become familiar with Carmen Lundy. She is somebody you should speak about in the manner that you speak about Sarah Vaughan and Billie Holiday and any other somebody that you may be more familiar with. So that's just how I feel about it. Well, thank you so much, Carmen Lundy, for joining Sugar in My Bowl. I really appreciate the time you spent with us.
And thank you, Joyce. Thank you. All the best.
All the best to you.
There are so many ways I can say just how grateful
and the freshness of the morning dew.
Mm-hmm. have been so many times when longing left me weary, talking to my shadow, looking in the mirror for some comfort in an empty room. Resigned to the quiet, resigned to the still, torn between the darkness and the dawn. Sunrise through my window, shining on my sorrow, lighting the horizon with hope that tomorrow I could ever love again. Love someone like you who's not afraid to feel between the darkness and the dawn. If I give myself to you, my dear, must I give my soul away? Don't want to make that same mistake again, giving everything to someone who's so afraid.
This is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.